everyone. Welcome back to Speak Free, one of the first episodes, actually, of 2025. I had a couple of interviews prior to this, but I've been quiet for the last month or so because Rachel and I have been overseas. But I'm back now and getting my feet somewhat under the table. So I'm delighted, though, to bring back a friend, someone who I work with in politics and who has been very gracious to remain, well, actually very available to talk politics, and that's Labour MP Ingrid Leary. Ingrid, welcome back.
Nice to see you, Simon.
It would be wrong of me in March to say Happy New Year, but I hope that your new year's begun happily. And if I can use that as a segue, I disappear for a month and I come back and find the polls have been reversed. Labour and your team must be feeling pretty chuffed.
Look, as you know, Simon, it's early days for the polls. It's good to see a trend. I think it's about the third one now where the left bloc would be able to form a government, and also now our leader has surpassed the National Party leader for preferred prime minister. So that is good news. But I think polls bounce around, and I also think we still have a lot of work to do between now and the election. There's a lot of water to go under the bridge. What I'm really happy about is our announcement via our leader, Chippy, last week about our focus on jobs, health and jobs, health and homes. We've got a bit of noise outside. I was just making sure it wasn't overwhelming. And that's really good because nobody wanted to hear from us after the election, quite rightly. I think they wanted to give the government a chance to see how they went. Now they're starting to get a bit of buyer's remorse. They want to know what we stand for. And it's very clear to us that that's where the pain points are for people. We need to get employment up. We're seeing some, you know, terrible unemployment. People going to Australia, health has become a really big issue in terms of access to healthcare and some of the cuts we've seen, and homelessness, which we know is an integral part of all the social demographics. If people can stay in warm, healthy homes for a period of time, they're going to do better on every other count, particularly children and those poverty statistics.
Says me to you, those weeks, months, if not sometimes years after an election when you've moved from government to opposition can be quite trying. As you say, the phone's off the hook, people don't want to engage. So says me to you, it's quite extraordinary that within a year, the polls have changed so swiftly. If you don't mind me asking, do you see that as a combination of the current coalition government failing, if you will? Or is it that, you know, Labour's got new momentum and policies, or is it a bit of a combo of both?
Probably a combo of both. I think the fact that we have been able to come across in such a united way to keep our focus fairly and squarely on New Zealanders and not on ourselves is unusual for an opposition. And that means we have been able to listen and to focus in on what is where the pain points are. But equally, I think what we are hearing a lot of is just the lack of leadership and the feeling that these smaller right-wing parties, New Zealand First and ACT, are running the show, and that is not what New Zealanders voted for. And certainly under the MMP system, it doesn't seem to be the right way, the right order of business, given that there are many national seats and that these small parties only got, you know, a small percentage, less than 10% each. I think ACT was about 8%, and now New Zealand First is only just above the threshold. So they're wondering why the Winston in particular and David Seymour seem to be calling the shots, and I think that's been a real problem for New Zealanders.
I'm hearing a bit the same. I mean, I think it goes across the left and right of politics, and it's the nature of MMP that the smaller parties, you know, it's the tail wagging the dog. And look, I'm happy to say here, there's a number of people in my circle, you know, obviously our centre right, who are saying they want a bolder, stronger national, and its voice is not there. I mean, what's some people have put to me, because I'm trying to put this in a way that it doesn't come across as particularly partisan, but the leadership in Labour hasn't really changed in some ways. And obviously a lot of people were frustrated with elements, if not a lot of elements, in the previous government. Chris Hipkins was the PM. How's he managed, in your view, to turn that round so quickly to be, as you note at the start, he's more popular than the current Prime Minister?
Well, I think leadership is about leading a team. And when the team is united and focused and there isn't infighting, that's a really good indication of how strong the leader is. And I don't think you can decouple the question of leadership with the good polling of the party. So clearly, Chippy is doing a great job. And I think he's really found his stride. we are, I think, coming across as the adults in the room. We may not agree with some of the policies in the centre on the right, but we can have adult discussions about it. And I think that's a good position for us to be in. And I think that's what New Zealanders are wanting and crying out for. And in my political view, currently that isn't being afforded under the leadership on the right-hand side from Christopher Luxon. We're just hearing too many slogans, and we're seeing a flip-flop, I believe, in values, where on one hand he's suggesting that he's supportive of certain things, and then on the other hand he's allowing decisions or things to take place, such as, for example, Winston Peters' Members' Bill, which looks at diversity, equality, inclusion. Luxon has said he supports it. He said he supports Te Tiriti, and yet he's allowed the ACT Party Treaty Principles Bill to go to the first reading. So, those might be seen as compromises under a coalition, which is how he's selling them. But I think for a lot of New Zealanders, they feel like incongruence and an inability to grasp where are the values of the government. They seem to be all over the show.
Yeah, the word I'd use for it is sort of an authenticity. I mean, speaking obviously as a former politician, I don't know how you found it yourself, Ingrid, certainly not as a former, but for me, as I, did my years in Parliament, would often up front with people on my values, and people who disagreed with me would, strange enough, vehemently disagree, but would often appreciate the fact that you're just up front and honest, and they can relate to that. And I think that is a bit of a struggle at the moment across us. Some of these, what sort of the cultural issues, aren't they, that are coming through, the treaty being a big one of them. Though you mentioned just earlier about sort of the adults in the room, I noticed there's a big forum on, or it's just been on, around investment. And I thought it was really great that Labor's there. Barbara Edmonds in particular is there as your finance spokesperson. I think from what I can see, sort of showing a partisan, a bipartisan, sorry, a bipartisan approach to these things.
That's true. We did have to ask to get other senior front bench people there as well, and I think that's a good look for New Zealand Inc. At the end of the day, we cannot afford to have the flip-flopping on major infrastructure projects. It is incredibly bad for investment. There's no predictability or certainty. So it's really important for us to show a united front. I will be interested to see how big the investment, so-called investment pipeline is that is being offered to those who have come into the country. My sense is they don't want to come all the way, hours and hours of flying with their big pockets to invest incrementally. They probably want to see some sustained investment and a pipeline and an overarching strategy. And I'm not sure that there is one, but we will see how they respond to it as these days unfold.
Yeah, look, I tend to agree with that. Actually, as I say, I've been overseas, mainly in Europe, and want to be clear, have not been engaged in any business or trade deals, but different ones that I've talked to, who, as you mentioned, have some very big pockets that they want to, well, they see too much risk still in New Zealand, too much, as you say, flip-flopping change, and wanting that surety. So again, I think it's good that Labor's there alongside the government. Hopefully that helps. But one thing is, I jumped topics because you mentioned right at the start about health, and that's obviously one of your areas of responsibility and interest. I see in some of the polling data, as I say, pulling myself back into New Zealand, health is the number one issue. I suspect that doesn't surprise you.
Yeah, and the data I've seen puts it about number two, but I guess cost of living and health between them cover a lot. And certainly in my electorate, health is number one, which is partly to do with access to healthcare and also the debacle over the new Dunedin Hospital. Look, the government has put enough money into health to keep the lights on. They like to say that it's record investment, but when we look at the regional funding, all the regions have had their funding cut between 6 and 14%. And that is impacting the front line. We are seeing longer waiting times. We have a crisis in primary health care and rural health care where people simply cannot get to a doctor. And of course, that is then impacting on the tertiary care. And, I think as we get older, Simon, you and I probably appreciate that our health is our prosperity in a way. And so certainly in my electorate with older people, health is the number one concern. We must invest in health. And it is just wrong to say that there are no frontline cuts, because I know in Southland there have been frontline cuts, for example, in mental health nursing. I know that there have been hiring freezes. And also, there is plenty of evidence now from the health sector itself to show that we've got people like psychiatrists reducing their time with patients in order to be able to write up notes because they don't have the support in the public system sometimes to be able to do that. So instead of taking a systems approach, there's been a kind of very hatchet job in terms of saying, you know, if you've got manager or if you're not frontline, then your job might be up for grabs, rather than looking at it holistically and realizing the reason that we have those jobs at those levels is to make sure that we have efficiency so the frontline workers can actually spend time with patients and not do paperwork.
See, now there's a new minister. It'll be interesting to see whether that affects any change. I think I read that we're seeing the end of the commissioner coming and the board being reinstated. If that's true, is that a positive step from your point of view?
Well, it's hard to tell. I mean, I think we need to see leadership. There's absolutely a leadership crisis. Last week, we saw two very senior people leave from the mental health sector around commissioning. So it's not only just in health, but also in mental health. And unfortunately, the new Minister Brown seems to be very focused on trotting out these targets and the fact that they've got targets. And when we look at the targets, they don't really make sense. For example, there are targets for people to be able to see specialists within a certain amount of time after a cancer diagnosis. That's great. But there's no target around screening, which is where the real problem is, because we all know that early detection is the biggest indicator of survivability for most cancers. So my sense is that the minister hasn't really got his head around the portfolio yet. And that's not a criticism, because it is a very complex portfolio. But I would have thought that Shane Retty, with his health experience, would have been much better positioned to lead this, and perhaps just, you know, wasn't being as ruthless as what some of the policies of this government were requiring. And maybe that's why he got moved.
Well, you and I both know, having been, well, I use the past participle, having been on the health committee, you are on the health committee. It's just such a huge, huge area. I sort of liken it to squeezing a balloon. No matter where you try to apply pressure, something else pops up. But it is massive. And as you mentioned, it's either number one or number two issue affecting New Zealanders. And I hear about it each day. Speaking actually about the health committee, amongst 50,000 topics, you're dealing with the gene tech bill at the moment, and I know different people are, well, different views on it. It's become somewhat controversial. I mean, are you able to share, to the extent you can, of sort of what you're hearing at the moment from submitters?
Yeah, look, very complex and controversial bill with many views on it, quite understandably, because this is the new frontier of science, really. The problem is that this is being rushed. It is really being rushed, and to the point where some really big industry players who will be impacted by this have asked for extensions and not been given them. For example, Dairy NZ wrote to Sam Uffendale as the chair of the committee, and they failed. They wrote to him as the chair. They didn't CC it to the clerk. He unilaterally made a decision without even taking it to the committee to decline their request for an extension to be able to do a decent submission. So that's problematic in my view. Then we've had others who have come through the actual correct process, like the wine growers, like Ngāi Tahu, Ngāti Porou, and some others who have not been granted an extension. And we actually took that to a vote because it's really important to us that we do this properly and that those big groups that are impacted should have their say. Some of them have put in submissions, like Ngāi Tahu, and I think the wine growers did, but Ngāti Porou, I think, might have missed the deadline. So we're not going to get the fulsome submissions that we need. And everybody has spoken to us about the rushed process and the fact that the submission period was over summer, when most people are wanting to be, you know, at barbecues with their family and downing tools, not really thinking about big, complex pieces of legislation.
Yeah, it's disappointing to hear. And that, as you say, it is a complex area. I was looking through it the other week, as you do. And I must admit, I'm happy to say it publicly, I was getting quite confused in some areas of just exactly what the law was trying to achieve or not. And so it is worrying actually to hear, Ingrid, that the process has been rushed through. I mean, do you know off the top of your head when it's meant to be reported back? Are we talking weeks or months from now?
Yeah, that's a good question, and I should know it's probably a mix of weeks and months. It's certainly not long enough for something that is going to impact our GE-free status and also impact our organic growers potentially and lots of other players in the market. This is something to be done thoughtfully. I'm not against progress, but we need to do it once, do it well, and do it thoughtfully and not have unintended consequences. And this is just feeling very rushed, and I'm not quite understanding what the rush is.
Well, it seems to be, again, as an outside observer now, a lot of legislation seems to be rushed through the House. And it was an alarm for me when I was in Parliament, and it's an alarm still going off now. And one of the striking things is how many amendment bills that you guys have to deal with, because of course the initial legislation got things wrong, and particularly in this gene tech space. This is a big risk to our reputation, both domestically and internationally.
That's right. And I think the danger, as you well know, Simon, is that laws can be made with little input from MPs. And so a lot of it comes down to how much time MPs have to be able to go through the submissions and go through the recommendations from officials and look at what might be missing or what needs strengthening. And also, so how much time they have, and also how hardworking the MPs are. And if the MPs are overwhelmed because they've got other things on, if they're just not engaged, you do get lawmaking by officials sometimes. And I think that can be a problem. We have wonderful officials in New Zealand, but they're not elected. And on controversial bills like the GenTech bill, it's really important that the members of the committee are across every, accountable and across every part of that bill so that they have done their job properly.
And can I just actually reflect on something you said there, and mainly for the listeners and viewers to understand? The MPs like Ingrid work exceptionally hard. It doesn't matter where people's political preferences lie, left or right, blue or red, the MPs across the House work exceptionally hard. Probably I would argue too hard. There's just so much going on that, the more controversial the topic, it's hard at times to actually get that time to reflect. So yeah, doesn't solve the problem, but I don't know about you, Ingrid. It was always one of the things that used to get me down somewhat when people would say, "Oh, you're lazy, you don't do anything." It's like, "Oh my God, look at my diary."
Yeah,
Hey,
and
look.
I think that shows why just having that bandwidth to be able to go, particularly to go through submissions, because we have people who, at their own expense, fly into Wellington to submit. People are really passionate. We have big groups sometimes, like for example, with affordable water, we have councils who are spending thousands of dollars of ratepayer money for lawyers to present really, really good, clear, detailed arguments, but also go through the legislation with a fine-tooth comb to point out what some of the consequences will be. And if the MPs don't have time to be able to get across that, and if the officials don't have time because they can only work a certain number of hours as well, then you end up with shoddy law. And I think we're all the poorer for it. So I would love to see slower lawmaking and more work done at the top end to make sure when it comes out the other end that it is fit for purpose.
Yeah, well, I got a hint of that about a month or so ago when I presented to, oh, I've forgotten, it might have been the Justice Committee actually around foreign interference, and was given 10 minutes, which was, better than nothing. But, even having sat in select committees, being one giving evidence within 10 minutes, the two, three of us presenting, the time flies by. And I'm not going to drag you into that particular topic, but it's complex. There's a lot to discuss, and yet just the most cursory touch. So, I mean, there's sort of a segue question then, because 4-year term has been floated again. I think there might even be some proposed legislation. Am I allowed to, can I be cheeky and ask you what your take on it? Shall we be giving you guys a 4th year in Parliament before an election?
Well, I think Labor is open to a referendum on that. I think we've got to be careful that we don't muddy the position of the 4-year term with what some of the checks and balances should be. Those are handled procedurally at a different level, as through the parliamentary rules. I think there is a big discussion to be had around checks and balances, but for the electorate, it's really for the electorate to decide whether it wants 4-year terms. And I do think probably the way to do that would be via a referendum and keep it simple so people don't get bogged down. But the idea that ACT have of sort of a 3 or 4 year term in the bill that they're proposing, depending on the configuration of the government and whether they're prepared to put opposition members on the select committees, is quite bonkers because it means that the voters don't know until after the election whether there's going to be a 3 or 4 year term, and that's just not fair to voters.
No, I like the term. I thought it was actually, I won't use the word I was going to use. But yeah, bonkers sums it up well. And if listeners are wondering what Ingrid's referencing, that the discussion of whether to go to 3 or 4 years is based on how much influence the winning party or the winning government of the day gives to the opposition. And the argument is that if a bit more is given to opposition in terms of select committee chairships, then the government can choose to go to 4 years. And as you say, Ingrid, what a terrible uncertainty to go into an election. Is it 3 or 4 years? Which, if I might, actually takes us back to where we started around investment. You know, New Zealand needs to be able to put on a very clear, unambiguous position on things. And investors want to know. I think we all want to know.
That's exactly right. And can you imagine an investor not knowing about to put in, you know, potentially billions of dollars into infrastructure, but with the caveat that we don't know whether this government is, or, you know, our government is going to be in for 3 years or 4 years and what that's going to look like. There's just no certainty there.
Nah, bonkers. Anyway, Ingrid, I am exceptionally conscious of your time. The parliament is sitting. I'm grateful that you've found the time to come and have a chat with me again. Look, thanks for all that you and all the MPs continue to do. We look forward to having you back and updating us from your perspective in the coming weeks and months.
Thank you for having me.